Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is former White House counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark, who along with his co-author Robert Kanaki has authored the brand new book, The Fifth Domain, Defending Our Country, Our Companies, and Ourselves in the Age of Cyber Threats. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Penguin Press. Richard, this whole idea of the fifth domain, that's government speak, that's military speak for cyberspace warfare, and the others are land, air, sea, and outer space. But this whole idea of the fifth domain, this cyberspace warfare, where have we seen this up until this point? I don't think it's something that people even think about when it happens, right?
Well, it's been happening for several years now. The United States used a software weapon to destroy a physical object in the real world when it attacked the Iranian nuclear facility. And that software weapon blew up the centrifuges at the tons. So rather than bombing it or hitting it with a missile, we hit it with a software package. The Russians have turned out the lights in Ukraine twice. President Trump just this month used a software attack, a cyber attack, to go after Iran after they shot down one of our drones. So it's going on.
I listen to a lot of radio, and I hear commercials about these whole ideas of preventing cyber attacks in your businesses and in your homes. But this isn't just limited to military action, right?
Oh, no. The major target are businesses and corporations, although individuals get attacked as well. But the militaries in Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea attack U.S. companies to steal secrets, to steal research information, and in the case of North Korea, to steal money.
So when you have a company that gets hacked, we hear about it, but is that almost, is it sort of like these foreign governments leave a calling card so you know who's doing what?
Well, sometimes. Sometimes they try to be really stealthy, and so many companies are attacked and don't know it. And in fact, there used to be a joke in this business. There were two kinds of companies: those that have been hacked and know it, and those that have been hacked and don't know it. But in the book, we say something's changed in the last few years. There's now a third kind of company, and that is the company that cannot be successfully hacked. And that's new. It's because new technology has come on board, and some corporations have figured out how to use it.
Has this been a generational thing? Because I know I always thought about this when I was younger, that it was just the teenage hackers. We always heard about those. Is it now that these teenage hackers have become adults and they're now adult hackers working in government positions in different countries?
Well, you're right to say, in the 1990s when I started in this business, the hacks occurred on Friday and Saturday nights when teenage boys couldn't get a date. And some of them were in their mother's basement on Red Bull and pizza, hacking into things. Now it's governments, the People's Liberation Army of China, the GRU of Russia, Iranian intelligence, the North Korean army. They're the major threat right now to American corporations and to the government.
As far as threats to the government go, I would think the military threat would be the biggest. You have these weapons that are controlled by computers, but if they're hacked, they're rendered essentially useless, right?
That's right, and the Pentagon's own Defense Science Board, as well as the Government Accountability Office, have written several reports saying that our big, new, expensive weapon systems can be hacked because they were not designed with cybersecurity in mind. So there's at least the potential that if we ever did get in a shooting war with another nation that has a cyber army like ours, maybe our regular weapons, our conventional weapons, could be hacked and turned off.
So it doesn't sound to me like the government is trying to hide the ball on this. They're right out in front of it, but essentially they don't know what to do about it. Is that a fair estimate?
Well, I think they know what to do, but they're reluctant to spend the money. People find spending money on cybersecurity not sexy. You know, if you buy an F-35 fighter plane, it's very visible. And it can fly over the Lincoln Memorial on July 4th. And if you spend money on cyber security, no one sees it. So unfortunately, sometimes it gets short shrift. But, you know, the fact of the matter is the companies we talked about in the book that don't get hacked are companies that are spending more on security.
And I think you reference in the book, a lot of them are spending about 8% of their revenue on cybersecurity. That seems like a lot.
No, not their revenue. They're spending 8 to 10% of their IT budget.
Okay.
But that is a lot for some of them. You know, Bank of America, for example, that would be over $1 billion a year just on securing their own network.
When we talk about the government, I know we're thinking federal government, or a lot of us do, but with election hacking, I mean, that's been all the rage the last several years. We're talking about little counties. I mean, our little county we live in, Woodbury County, Iowa, I'm sure there's hardly any cybersecurity in place, and so these elections really stand to suffer if anybody ever got wind of or got the idea to start hacking in counties such as this, right?
That's right. I mean, there are over 4,000 counties, and they all run the elections. My little county in Virginia, we have 7,000 people. We don't have money for cybersecurity. And so when you are told by election security people in the states and counties, well, we weren't hacked by the Russians, there's no way, in fact, that they would know, because they don't have the sophisticated detection gear that you would need to be able to detect Russian interference.
Is it not something as simple as the federal government simply taking over the election software?
Well, it could. I mean, the Constitution says the states run the elections, but the Congress may provide for rules for federal elections. So, yeah, Congress could set minimum standards for cybersecurity for elections, but then they'd have to pay for it. And there's a bill that has passed the House. It's being held up in the Senate by Republican Mitch McConnell. It's designed to send a lot of money to the states and counties, so they could protect themselves against the Russians in 2020. But Mitch McConnell, for some reason, doesn't appear to want to stop the Russians in 2020, and he's holding up the money.
When we think about the federal government and the way they protect against this, something I found interesting in the book is there's no single cybersecurity office for all the federal government. Each one of those departments, and there's a bunch of them, have to operate these themselves, and that seems just like a recipe for disaster.
And the disaster occurs every year. Every year, the government rates on an A, B, C, D, E, F scale its own departments, and a lot of them are consistently getting D's, occasionally F's. Nothing happens as a result. You really can't expect the Agriculture Department or the Interior Department, the Education Department, to defend themselves again. So what we propose in the book is what the states do, many of them. Have one IT department that offers cybersecurity and, you know, basic internet services as a utility, so that the Office of Personnel Management, for example, the HR department of the federal government, which was hacked by the Chinese and millions of secret records were stolen, well, they wouldn't be doing security under our plan. They'd have a security company doing on contract to a federal IT department.
I'm chatting with former White House counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark about his brand new book, The Fifth Domain, Defending Our Country, Our Companies, and Ourselves in the Age of Cyber Threats. He co-authored it with his co-author, Richard Kanaki. Richard, what the companies that are most resilient to cybersecurity, are there any qualities that stand out that set them apart from all the other companies, or just money?
Well, the money flows from something else. Money flows from governance, and by that I mean leadership. Does the CEO think this is an important issue? Does the board think this is an important issue? Is there somebody on the board who understands this issue? Is there a committee of the board of directors that reviews this issue quarterly? Can the person in charge of IT security get to the CEO? Can she get to the board? So that when she's denied the funds she needs, at least that's a rational decision that everybody knows about. And that's a risk that everybody has agreed to. We're not saying you should spend huge amounts of money. It depends on the company. Just be informed and have an informed decision about the risk, because you could be betting the company.
How much of a cat and mouse game is this between the hackers and the people making the cybersecurity software? That it's just the advancements you're trying to get one step ahead of the other each and every time.
Every day, the hackers find a new way to get in. And every day the defenders discover that and try to block it. And it's a constant battle. You never achieve cybersecurity. You're always trying to achieve it. And then new technologies come along. We have a whole discussion in the book about 5G and the Internet of Things, about quantum computing, about machine learning. These are technologies that have just begun to be deployed, and they will change things in a big way.
You cite in the book examples of banks that really tout their investments in cybersecurity, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, those types of big-name banks. Aren't they really just setting themselves up, though, by touting this, setting themselves up for a hack?
Well, I thought that, too, and we talked to them and said, you know, why are you willing to go public with the level of effort that you're spending and the number of people that you're working on this? And they said, look, we're going to be attacked one way or the other. We are big targets anyway. Every day the Russians and Chinese and North Koreans and Iranians are trying to get into our bank. So they don't think it matters. But for other companies that we spoke to, one of them was a hotel company, they said, please don't use our name because we don't want to attract attention.
And when they do that, is that simply a personal preference? Or, I mean, I guess I don't understand the difference between the companies that want their names used and the ones that don't.
Well, I think some companies think it's a matter of advertising, particularly the banks. Now, they think people want their money in a bank that's secure, and so they want to say, we really spend a lot of time and energy on this. For other companies, hotel companies, health insurance companies, they think perhaps that the hackers don't know about them or aren't attracted to them. If, however, you wave a red cape in front of the hackers and say, ha-ha, you can't get us, you say that publicly, the hackers take that as a challenge and go after them.
Are we sort of the victims? You mentioned health, hotels. Are we sort of the victims here of our own, I don't know about laziness, but advancements in technology where we have to use a credit card if we want to go to a hotel? We can't pay cash anymore. They ask for our license number on our driver's license and all this stuff and put it in. So if we went back to paying cash for everything, that would really solve this problem for a lot of these places, right?
Well, if we were a cash society, then there wouldn't be credit cards to steal. But that's not who we are. And so credit cards get stolen all the time, at least the numbers do. But the good news so far for us as individuals is that the credit card companies always make up the loss. If someone learns your credit card number online and rushes out to buy something with it, when your bill comes in, if you say, oh, wait, I didn't do that, my number was compromised, almost always they'll take that line off the bill and they'll send you a new card. Now, then you have to go and change all your credit card numbers on all the things that you pay for monthly automatically. But you don't lose money.
All right. This book is simply an eye-opener for a lot of things, and I think it's things that we viscerally knew, but we didn't know all the specifics and how dire it is. The book is The Fifth Domain, Defending Our Country, Our Companies, and Ourselves in the Age of Cyber Threats by Richard Clark and Robert Kanaki. The book's available now wherever books are sold from the good folks at Penguin Press. Richard, just another fantastic offering from you, and thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Great to be with you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
This is the dawning of the age.